What's up, baseball fans? Welcome to another episode of the 11.7 podcast, where we are here to recap weekend number 6 of the college baseball season. We're going to preview the midweek coming up, and we should give you a lot of thoughts and opinions now that we're, you know, a month and a half, almost 2 months into the season. It's been flying by. I hope everybody had a good Easter, and man, with this past weekend was, I don't know about you, Dimitri, but I really like the Thursday, Friday, Saturday schedule, right? For most of the teams last week, it was nice to have 80% of the college weekend done by Saturday night. And then Sunday, you get to focus on, you know, 5 or 6 different games. So I thought that was pretty cool. Nice little break there. But
I love it because this Sunday, just a few, like, marquee premier game. And you actually get a Sunday off, like a weekend day off, where you can like not have to sit there and watch so many games.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. No Jack today. Jack he's got a flight in like 5 hours. We're recording late on Monday night, and Jack will be flying to DC. I don't know what he's doing this weekend. Maybe he's calling some games. I don't know. I forgot to ask. But he did a really good job broadcasting the Duke UVA series this past weekend. Dude, he's a natural. He'll be, you know, one of the faces of college baseball here pretty soon. Like, he's just excelling. So happy for Jake and his broadcasting career. Speaking of broadcasting, I threw out a tweet today from the 11.7 Twitter account. You know how there's the Golden Spikes Award? Well, we should give out the Golden Mics Award, like microphone. Best college baseball broadcaster, whether it's radio or TV. Man, I think people would really enjoy that because there's so many really good ones, very few bad ones. Now, there are some bad ones that I hate listening to, but, you know, maybe it's just not my cup of tea. But when when everything's all said and done, there's probably about 20 to 25 that I absolutely love to listen to. And it sucks because sometimes I'll have 3 games on at once and I can only listen to one at a time. But yeah, I think we should give it away award this year.
I feel like, how do you measure that though? Because so many people are going to feel robbed. There are so many good ones. How do we do that? Because I saw you like posted it and texted in the group. How are we going to pick a winner? Is it going to be a fan voting contest? Like, are we going to pick the 10 finalists and then go from there?
That's a good point. I mean, I think it comes down to like consistency, 1, electric moments, 2.
Or from that season. They need to be part of some electric moments from this current season.
Right, yeah, it's this season only. No, dude, we'll figure it out. Fan voting could be a big factor into it, but they give away awards for everything, right? And you have to make decisions, so it'll be our journey to make the decision. Jack can help with the voting as well, but yeah, we could do it. It might piss some people off, but who cares?
Let's do it. I mean, maybe we give the award to the person that we thought had the most viral or electric call on the year.
Something like
that. I'm down. I think we can do that because people will understand, yeah, hey, there were 2 viral moments. Ah, man, we just missed out. But it's not personal. Nothing personal.
Exactly. And we can do it every year. It'd be a lot of fun. But anyways, it's just a little behind-the-scenes stuff there. Dude, we just finished watching. One of the biggest upsets, I know it's a midweek, but it was a big upset today. LSU loses to Southern. Pretty bad. Like, it got ugly towards the end of the game. And LSU's now lost 6 out of their last 7 coming off that sweep. They got swept in Fayetteville. And the LSU Tigers look lost. I mean, they threw Thatcher Hurd out there in the 9th inning today to just try to limit the damage. And he was a weekend starter, like, last week. So, man, LSU, I don't know. I don't know if the curse is real. We talked about the curse. Mississippi State wins it all in 2021. They come in dead last in the SEC in 2022. Ole Miss wins it all in 2022. They come in dead last in the SEC in 2023. LSU wins it all in 2023. Right now they're sitting at 2-7, very tough schedule, obviously. But then they piggyback that with a loss to Southern on a Monday night. I think there's a lot of question marks in this LSU lineup besides Tommy White. It feels like Tommy White's carrying like 50% of the runs that this team scores. Like when he's not hitting or not on base, they don't score.
Bear Jones is doing some damage. Hayden Trevinsky. Right,
they're like inconsistent. Same with like Trevinsky, you know, Kling. Like those guys are not consistently there. Like last year when there was Trey Morgan, Dylan Cruz, Tommy White, and those guys that were just like consistent throughout the year. So anyways, I think LSU will turn it around at some point. Personally, I don't think they should be ranked, and I don't think they want to be ranked, because if you're LSU, just going in the mind of a college baseball player or a coach, you would rather not be ranked than like ranked 21st or 24th if you're an LSU type of team. Now, if you're a, you know, Campbell or a UC Santa Barbara, Northeastern, you want to be in the rankings. But if you're bottom of the SEC right now, you want clear slate. You don't want to be ranked super low. You want that target off your back, and you want to come back and sneak up on teams ultimately. So that's just something that popped up. Didn't have it planned to talk about on the show, but we just watched the ending. And congrats to the Southern Jaguars. SWAC teams, it feels like every year, one or two of them will beat an SEC team.
First win for the Jags at Alex Box Stadium since 2005.
But that's cool. Like they get to remember that the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
Hey, they get to beat the defending champs, even to put another little, add a little extra flair to it. But I don't want to talk too much about LSU. There's so much better things to talk about right now. They're down. They're bad. We don't want to pile on them.
No, I did not either. I was going to give all the credit to Arkansas from this past weekend, because the hog pen was electric. Arkansas, I mean, they did what they were supposed to do.
Is the home field time?
Yeah, let's do – I have it pulled up. That's actually a great segue. I'm about to share my screen here. Our home field, if you guys are first tuning into the podcast, we are official partners with Home Field Apparel, and you guys have been doing great. All of our followers have been, you know, buying a lot of stuff and helping us out, helping them out. They're sponsoring or partnering with us for our weekend series pick'em competition that we do every week. And they're going to be setting up our winners for each contest in Omaha this summer with us and all the perks and everything. So every week, or actually every episode, we give away a team of the week. And when we say team of the week, just a team that, you know, goes above and beyond expectations. And the Arkansas Razorbacks still sitting at the number one spot in the top 25. They go and take care of business, sweep LSU. Very fun series. There were some really good moments, nail-biting moments. My adrenaline was rushing the whole time. But here's just a look at what they have for Arkansas. As you can see, they really hit on like the retro throwback Home Field Apparel does. And if you use our code CWS24 at checkout, it's 15% off your first purchase. But something like this right here. Like, that's cool. That's an old retro throwback shirt. This is more baseball-centric.
That one right there, I love that. I love the old script with the little thing that comes under, like Oklahoma State.
Yeah, and it's a super safe crew neck. The thing with Homefield is, like, it's the, like, premium. You know whenever you buy a shirt and it just feels premium?
It just
feels soft. It fits well. Makes you look good. That's the type of quality they have. So here's more Arkansas baseball stuff over here. Football, it doesn't matter. They have every sport. This one's cool. This is Razorback Country cartoon logo. Really cool. So shout out to Home Field Apparel. You just go to homefieldapparel.com and check out what they have. They have over 150 schools now. And the big thing that we want to talk about is, now that college basketball is wrapping up, they sent us an email last week saying that they're about to dump a lot of college baseball targeted stuff. And there might be some hats. There might be some jerseys. Like, you guys just wait. It's about to get real over there at Home Field. So, yeah, shout out to Home Field. They're really, really fun and easy people to work with, too. Like, down-to-earth, salt-of-the-earth kind of people. They're not in it to get rich. They're just kind of college sports fans like us. And they just want to make cool products. So really enjoy working with them. But let's talk about this Arkansas series. I was dead wrong. Jack was dead wrong. Dimitri, you picked Arkansas. I thought this was a perfect spot for an LSU bounce back. when nobody's expecting it, you start 2-4 in SEC play, not playing good baseball. I thought this LSU team was going to take it up a couple notches, maybe a players only meeting in the locker room, something. And they didn't play bad.
I think you're a week early on that thought. That team meeting is coming now.
Right. Yeah. I think it comes now after the loss to Southern. But yeah, it's just sometimes the game moves fast, and LSU wasn't able to capitalize on like the big moments. Runners in scoring position, but every game was tight. Like they lost by 3, then they lost in extra innings, and then they lost by 2 late. And so it's like, I know it's a tough place to play, but you just can't get swept in the SEC. Like there's a huge difference between being 2-7 and 3-6. It astronomical. Like mentality.
Or 4-5.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even saying 4-5. If they could have just squeaked out one win and 3-6, you're like, okay, we're a sweep away. We'll play a Missouri or somebody later in the year, and we'll try to sweep them. But, yeah, anyways, let's talk about Arkansas. Nathan Smith is about as automatic as it comes. And I don't want to touch on that too much because everybody in the world knows Hagan Smith. He's an automatic double-digit strikeout. And the thing for me is, it's the guys after him that really make the team, right? Because last year with LSU, Paul Skeens was automatic. Everybody knew that. It was like, who's going to pitch Saturdays and Sundays and get us at least one more win, if not two? And you had guys step up in those roles. Arkansas, it doesn't drop off much. Like, Brady Tiger and Mason Molina do not drop off much from Hagan Smith as far as, like, productivity. You're getting 5, 6, 7 innings out of them, like close to double digit strikeouts as well. And to me, I think that's what separates this Arkansas team from pretty much everybody else in the country. How do I put this? I like Clemson a lot. I think Clemson's very offensive. I think they're scrappy and play a different style of baseball than the top 5 teams in the country. They're not an Arkansas threat. Same thing with like UNC, Texas A&M. Like, I think there's small flaws in those teams, even though they're elite of the elite. This Arkansas team, now that the offense is playing a little bit better, like they're already a good defensive team. The pitching is elite. I don't know if I want to say this, but they feel like a lock to make Omaha. Because I don't see them losing twice in a regional or a super regional because of that starting pitching.
We thought the same thing in 2021.
I think this team is better than the 2021 team.
Pitching wise, yes, but offensively, no. But right. I mean, when they're giving up 3 runs or less, or some feels like 3 runs or less every game, it's hard to lose in college.
But you can tell your bullpen this weekend was. I mean, I'm not going to say it's Kevin Capsworthy because he was a Golden Spikes winner. He was unbelievable all year. But, like, he's a guy that you can roll out twice in a weekend. That's a huge piece there, too.
No, I think this weekend said more about Arkansas than LSU because it's easy for Arkansas to slip up, have one bad game on the weekend, go 2 out of 3. Hey, successful weekend. No, they swept their ass. And they let everybody know, like, we can win Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, week in and week out.
Yeah.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday for some weekends. But, yeah, that said more about Arkansas. So, great weekend for the Hog. The Hog pen was electric. Bullpen was great. McIntyre, awesome. Tiger, like, he's just – nobody's even talking about him. And I think he's one of the best starting pitchers in the SEC.
Exactly.
So – yeah, I'm really high on Arkansas, but we know how this all goes. I don't want to get too high on them yet.
Yeah, and Arkansas' schedule is going to get a lot harder. Like, let's just say they caught LSU at a bad time. They've played Missouri and Auburn before them, the 2 series. So, in fact, they've played the 3 technically worst SEC teams. They have Ole Miss this weekend, Alabama, South Carolina, Florida, Kentucky, Mississippi State, Texas A&M. It's going to get a little bit tougher for the Hogs, but I just think this pitching is going to play all year. Like, unless they have an injury or two,
Exactly. I was thinking like, just take 1 week at a time. Arkansas fan, just 1 week at a time. Please keep your hopes down. It's like talking to a girl. Don't get too infatuated too early. Pace yourself. Let it marinate. Let it come. It'll come. Whether this year, next year, 3 years, it's going to come. Just enjoy each and every win. I think that's the biggest thing for Arkansas too. The player and the team. Hey, we've been this good before. We've been this good for a while. Now, just worry about the present moment. Let everything else take care of itself because it will kill you. Tennessee, you know they were looking at Omaha when Notre Dame rolled into town. They were the best team in the country by a long shot. So it's just like, I want Arkansas to make it, but I'm also like nervous for them because I'm like, dude, let's slow down a little bit, one step at a time.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. But I guess anything else around the SEC, you know, Texas A&M with a huge statement sweep over Auburn. Those games were fun just because Auburn felt like they were fighting for their SEC lives. They also have had a bad draw with scheduling, but Auburn's now 1-8 in SEC play. That's tough to get back from.
Oh my God.
That's tough to put yourself in a position. You pretty much have to sweep one weekend just to like, it doesn't matter when the weekend is, but just to like get back in the thick of things. But this Auburn team, I think, is good. But I think it said more about Texas A&M, right? So I'm about to go on a little spiel. When Texas A&M rolls the lineup over, you know, they got Graham Grahovic hitting in the nine hole, who is one of the most talented freshmen in the country. And he's been hitting the ball well. But then you get, like, the Jace LaViolette and the, you know, Braden Montgomery back-to-back at the top of the order. And those guys are unbelievable, dude. Like, these are major league players. 115 exit velocity. It doesn't matter if it's a lefty or a righty. Like, they just hit the crap out of the baseball.
And Montgomery got out of that graveyard you call Sunken Diamond out in Palo Alto.
Yeah, I mean, he's got 16 homers. I think he's second in the SEC, and maybe first in the SEC, but maybe second in the nation in RBIs. Like, this guy has been a flat-out superstar. And, like, he's putting himself in a position to possibly go number one overall.
No, stop.
What do you mean no?
Stop.
What do you mean no? Explain to me why.
Braden Montgomery, I don't even think goes top five.
Are you kidding me?
No.
What? Wait, all right, explain to me why.
I mean, okay, yes, he's been a big-time hitter this year, but I don't think from a MLB draft standpoint, I don't think he's been a because, okay, the ranking, the most draft rankings and stuff, we're including his ability to pitch a little bit. Dude, he's not
that
even
doesn't pitching. Matter for the draft.
I know, but that was like kind of what was boosting his thing. But anyway,
let me teach you something about the draft. All these teams care about are tools. And Ben Montgomery has tools. He great hitting, hits with power, fast running, unbelievable arm strength. Like him and Dakota Jordan, don't be shocked, but Dakota Jordan over at Mississippi State, obviously, I think those two could be sneaky top five overall picks.
All right, let's do that. Travis Bazana, surefire top five pick, right?
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, I like it. I think he's really good, but I wouldn't say surefire.
You'll think he's the top five pick.
I do, but I'm saying I don't think he's a surefire.
All right. Okay. Is he a top five pick? Probably.
It depends if they want. Like, can he play another position besides second base?
Jake Burns, the top five pick.
I don't think so.
Is Seaver King a top five pick?
I love Seaver King, but. It's tough. Let me take a step back. I don't know much about the high school class. I really don't. And if there's like some high schoolers out there that are studs, then like I apologize. But let's just talk top five college players, like draft eligible college players. Right now, for me, I think Charlie Condon is the best hitter.
Top five. That was the next name.
I think he is as close to a surefire top five pick. I mean, I think he's close to a major league hitter right now.
How can you say Condon is surefire and Bazana is not?
Because I think Condon is a much better hitter than Bezzana.
I'm not saying one is better than the other or anything. I'm just talking about purely top five. Travis Bezzana came into the year as a probable number one pick, and he hasn't done a single thing to give me any doubt that he won't still be a top five pick. His bat to ball skills are through the roof. His contact through the roof. His barrel is through the roof. Everything.
It's the position he plays, though. He plays second base. Like, is he going to get drafted as a possible center fielder, maybe a shortstop, third base?
Okay, fine. Like, I mean, I'm not a draft guru, so I'm probably speaking out of line here, but.
Well, I'm not. So we're just going to talk things through because I think most of our listeners are probably as educated as we are when it comes to the draft. But, like, this is just a fun conversation. Like, Jack Caglione will be a top five pick.
Correct. That's one.
Because, and like, I don't know if he's going to go number one overall or if he's going to go number five, but like, I would bet a lot that he goes top five just because I can't see five teams passing up on him and his abilities. I think Condon and Bezzana
are. Let's do this. Top five college players pick. So we don't have to worry about the high school shit.
Right. Okay. I think Condon and Bezzana are in a similar category as far as.
They're going to be the top five college players pick. Bezzana, Cags, and Condon.
Right. I think Braden Montgomery is the best of the rest.
Okay.
MLB draft
run. Seaver King, Sirota, Hagen Smith, Nick Kurt. You think he's better than all those?
Yes.
You know what? I think I would take Montgomery today over Nick Kurt. But yeah, I do really like Nick Kurt as a pro hitter.
Yeah, but I mean, he's a first baseman. Like, yeah, he's great defensively. He's been hurt this year.
You see why it popped into my mind? Like, wait a minute, what number one overall pick?
Let's get back to the reason we were talking about this. I think Montgomery and Dakota Jordan are going to sneak up on people. I think by the time that the draft hits, you're going to see both of those names fly up the draft rankings because of the tools they possess. That's all I'm saying. Like, you can't teach Dakota Jordan's power. You can't teach Braden Montgomery's athleticism. Like, I'll put it to you this way. I think Braden Montgomery has not a good chance. I think there's a chance that he goes number one over him. And people are going to call me crazy, but what he's doing at Texas A&M this year is crazy.
He's a switch hitter. Let me pull up his official stats, because I'm not saying like you're so out of so wrong or anything, because obviously there's no totally wrong answer. We don't know what they're going to do, but I'd be shocked if Montgomery went in the top three college players taken. But let me see. Montgomery, 381 average, 26 walks, 26 walks, 18 punch out. Only three stolen bases, but still 16 homers, 47 RBI, slugging 933. I mean, he's clearing the Texas A&M lineup by a long shot. So maybe if he keeps that up, he'll probably be a top five pick.
Yeah. Well, let's use this and let's talk about Charlie Condon and how ridiculous his numbers are. I don't have them in front of me. I know he has 19 home runs, which is on pace for over like almost 40 if he plays into like a super regional, let's say. He probably won't play into a super regional, but if he plays three or four games in a regional, that's close to 40 on pace. And he's not slowing down.
I just need to say something real quick. Travis Bezzana just hit a 452-foot home run at 109-mile exit velo.
Did he? That's about right. I have a funny story. I was talking to a scout at the UNC game last week, and he was asking me about Vance Honeycutt. And I was like, look.
We talked about this last episode or two episodes.
Yeah, and like, before I could finish, he hit a home run. So anytime I talk down on a player or say, like, not so fast, he hits a home run. So anyways, that's about right. I'm not even surprised. Let's go Charlie Condon. Right now, Charlie Condon is the Golden Spikes winner. I know what Cags is doing. And I know he hits the walk-off home. Jack Taglione hits a walk-off home run the same day that he pitches.
To win a series. You can't get much more MVP than that.
And it feels like on the weekends, Cags carries this Florida Gators team to consistent weekend series wins because he wins on Sunday when he's pitching. He also does it with the bat. On top of that, he did it last year, all last year, 33 homers. The one game I felt like he slipped up was that championship game where he gave up a ton of runs to LSU. But
we're at the halfway mark in the college baseball season.
Like for the regular season, but then you have conference tournaments, you have regionals.
How many did Cags hit at the end of the regular season last year?
I think 26 or 27.
Didn't he finish with 33?
Yeah. I think he hit one in the conference tournament. He hit two in the regionals. I don't think he hit any in the supers, and I think he hit two or three in the College World Series.
All right, let me do this real quick. Stats. 2023 season. Florida, why do you not have? Oh, here we go. All right. 2023, 71 game, 33
homers. That's so many games.
71 game. Condon had 19 homers in 28 games. So he's on pace for 56, 38. He's on pace for over 40 home runs.
Like 48 homers right now in 71 games.
38 through 56, 71 be 15. So he would hit about 10 more. 30, 40. He's on pace for about 45 to 48 homer.
Yeah.
In 71 game game clip. So unbelievable. I mean, 500.
Why are they still pitching to him? I mean, like, I know Collins and Altford are both tearing up the ball too, but he's got to be the guy in the lineup that's written in red ink saying he's not going to beat us. Like, he will. I would without hesitation walk him with the bases loaded. It doesn't matter.
Very long treatment.
Yeah, I do not want him beating us.
26 walks and 8 hit by pitches with 103 AB. So 34 plus 103, 137. 137 plate appearances. He gets on. He's been walked or hit by pitch. 34, 128, almost 20, about 25%, more or less. So 1 out of 4 at bats, he's getting put on base via walk or hit by pitch.
It needs to be closer to half his at bats. I'm tired of from the opposing team. I'm not pitching to him. So, anyways.
33 might be a difficult number to get to if they start walking him crazy.
Yeah, he still hasn't really gotten cold yet, which is, like, at some point this year, I think he'll get cold.
Well, he needs 14 more. He needs 14 more.
I mean, he's still hitting 5. He's hitting 5.11. His OPS is, like, 18.26 or something.
Yeah.
Which means, in simplistic form, OPS is like how many bases he gets per at bat. So he's almost getting 2 bases per at bat. He's almost an automatic double.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the SEC is as deep as I've ever seen it.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about arguably one of the best players in the conference on a 4-5 Georgia team who just swept Alabama or 2 weekends ago and then took the lost the hard-fought series to Tennessee. But, I mean, That is your 6th place team in the East, and they're a tough out, a very tough out. So
You know what's cool about the SEC is there is one superstar per team, like 1 to 2, depending on what you want to call a superstar. But like one from even Missouri has Trevor Austin, who is a really good player. Like he would be considered a superstar at pretty much any Big 12 school right now. But it seems like every team has that one guy where you're like, he's an All-American on paper. And so like making the all SEC team and making, you know, like the SEC player of the year is just as hard to feel like as the Golden Spikes, other than a few games. other than the Bazana.
I'm thinking of a team like, okay, for example, Kentucky. Their offense is a juggernaut right now, right?
Yeah.
They have 29 home runs as a team.
Yeah, they're built different, though. Huge ballpark. But
I mean, they're only hitting 287 as a team, which is, I think is pretty high for a team average, no?
Yeah, it's pretty, I mean, yeah, if you're polished.
It's average, a little above average, right?
Right, yeah.
So, like, I mean, but they're slugging 471. So I'm just like, the numbers don't make sense to how good this Kentucky offense is from a scoring standpoint.
Yeah, they're built different, Dimitri. Like, this is, we're hitting singles, we're hitting and running, we're trying to draw walks, leaning into pitches. I bet their hit by pitches is pretty high compared to a lot of teams. And Kentucky, like, they're built on pitching and defense. Like, that's what they are. That's why they were a super regional team last year.
I think this Kentucky team is going to be the exact same as last year, dude. They played a soft SEC schedule to start the year, and then they're going to get humped. Because last year, remember, they were on fire. Everybody's like, oh, my God, Kentucky's so good. And then they just rolled into Baton Rouge, lost 2 out of 3. Then they rolled somewhere else and lost 2 out of 3 again. It was like, oh, this is the Kentucky team. A good team, but not a top 3 team in the SEC.
Right.
So, like, because they've got Alabama at Auburn, Tennessee, South Carolina, Arkansas, Florida, Vanderbilt left on the schedule.
Yeah, those last three series especially are going to be tough.
So they're first in the SEC, but I think at the end of the day, it's going to be a Vanderbilt or Florida, maybe Tennessee at the top. And then, I mean, it's just, this is the deepest I've ever seen. A 1-8 Auburn team is better than probably 30 teams in the country. They're a top 30 team. They're a top 30 team in terms of talent and like how good they can be.
You gotta think back to Auburn's schedule.
Top 30.
Let's pull it up.
I have.
I don't remember what Auburn did.
Vanderbilt, Arkansas, A&M. They played.
And they have Tennessee this week. Auburn has Tennessee, then Kentucky. Back to back.
Kentucky next weekend. And then you go to Mississippi State, to LSU. Like, I mean, is this the year a 10-win SEC team gets in the postseason? I hope not, because I think that's terrible. But I think they're good enough to be a top 64 team at the end of the year.
Yeah. I like going into WarrenNolan.com and doing predicted final standings.
I hate the predicted.
I just want to see what the SEC has predicted. I'm curious. So they predict Tennessee to win the East at 19-11, which I'm not going to argue with.
No, 14-7 the rest of the way.
Yeah, that's winning 2 out of 3 every series, which I think they can do.
Yeah.
Arkansas is predicted to win. They have Arkansas predicted 24-6 in the West. And, based off the predicted, they have Auburn predicted 12-18, which means they're going to go 11-10 in the last 7. That's crazy.
By the way, do you agree with my statement now that I said about 3 weeks ago that Mississippi State is the better team of the two Mississippi teams?
Yeah. Definitely have more firepower.
Preseason, I thought Mississippi State was going to be the better team. I think they're actually a really good team.
Well, we'll find out April 12th through the 14th, 2 weeks.
Yeah. The Egg Bowl?
Yeah, whatever they call it.
The Governor's Cup.
Yeah. But look, let's pivot off the SEC. We just spent the first 20 minutes of the show or whatever on this. I'm gonna talk about a team that I think is flying under the radar in the ACC, and that's North Carolina. They're 25-4 this year, 20-0 at home. 20-0 at home. I know their schedule pre-conference was not great, but they're 10-2 in the ACC, tied with somebody in the ACC. I don't remember who now. Who else is 10-2?
Virginia Tech.
Oh, Virginia Tech. But Virginia Tech's schedule is super soft. But anyways, let's talk North Carolina, because the last 3 weekends, they went to Wake and swept them. They hit, 14 home runs in 3 games? Is that right?
14 homers on the weekend.
Yeah, the weekend before that, they sweep Georgia Tech. And they also swept Pittsburgh. So they have three SEC sweeps. It's funny. They lost two out of three at Miami 3 weeks ago. And I was like, hey, this Miami team's really good. I'm walking back that statement. But anyways, North Carolina, you know, they got Cook, they got freaking Honeycutt, and you know, you look at their lineup, they got two freshmen starting. One of their weekend arms is a true freshman. This team's gonna be good for a long time, I think. Now they go, this is a tough, like the ACC schedule makers did not do the Tar Heels any favor. At Wake next week, after that, at Virginia. So they got back-to-back road series against the preseason two favorites in the conference. But I'm really liking this North Carolina team. I was down on them preseason. I was wrong.
Yo, if they get through, let's just say they win two out of three at Virginia this weekend. They get Notre Dame, NC State, Virginia Tech, Louisville. This team might be the favorite to win the ACC outside of Clemson.
Yeah, well, that brings up another point. Like, NC State is playing good baseball, too. After getting swept at Georgia Tech, they win two out of three against Duke. They sweep Notre Dame, and then they have Louisville coming up. So NC State, like, could potentially be, if they sweep Louisville, 11-4 in conference, which is a big statement series. I mean, a big statement, too. So the ACC, I haven't quite figured out. That was my whole point bringing this up. All right. The team with the best record, Virginia Tech, they're 10-2 in conference, 21-5 overall. But here's they've played Notre Dame, Louisville, and Boston College.
They're going to end up right around 500 by the end of the year.
Well, and Pitt. So Boston College, Pitt, Louisville, Notre Dame. Probably four of the bottom five teams. They still have a big chunk of theirs. Like they had Duke left, North Carolina, Miami, Virginia. Like, it's going to get a little bit harder for Virginia Tech. But this team, I'm starting to buy in on Virginia Tech, too. Like, they have, like, Carson DeMartini is a superstar. Like, they have a legitimate starting rotation that eats up innings for them. So, like,
come on. It's not bad. Don't drink the hokey Kool-Aid too early.
But we said the same thing. Virginia is going to finish in front
of them. Duke is going to finish in front of them.
I mean,
they're going to be fourth at best in the Coastal.
But they're already 10-2, and they
have
a four-game lead on Duke. So you think Duke's going to make up four games on them?
100%. I mean, Duke just played Wake, Clemson, NC State, and Virginia. Now they get Miami at home. They go to Pittsburgh, at Virginia Tech, Florida State, Georgia Tech, North Carolina. So I think Duke sweeps Pitt. They're going to win two out of three against Miami at home. They're going to sweep Pitt. That's 5-1. And then they go to Blacksburg and play Virginia Tech. They can make it up right there. They can make it up
right there. I guess.
So I think it's too early to tell, but I do think the ACC is really deep this year as well. I mean, Florida State, Clemson.
Let's talk Florida State real fast because I have a gripe. In everybody's top 25 that I've seen, everybody has like Florida 5th or 6th, and they have like Florida State like 15th. Look, Florida State's only lost four games this year, and three of them were at Clemson where they blew huge leads.
On all three games.
In all three games. Like, they were maybe, I don't know, nine outs away from winning two out of three. No, wait a second.
They were one out away from winning one, and then they were another couple outs away from winning the other, so... Absolutely, Florida State.
Like, why are we undervaluing what Florida State's doing?
I'm not undervaluing them. I'm valuing them at all.
I really think Florida State is dangerous with their starting rotation. They're 22-4 this year.
I love their rotation. I love their lineup too.
Strength of schedule 8 in the country, and like their three losses, they gave up 8 runs in the 9th to lose 9-8 to Clemson. And then they gave up 12 unanswered in the Sunday game when they were up 12-2. So, like, that's not a bad team. Come on. Like, yep. Why?
No, I know. Oh, well, I don't
keep sleeping. I think Florida State is, like, I don't want to say this because people are going to hold it against us. But I think Florida State is – the second best team in the ACC right now.
I mean, I don't think that's an outrageous statement at all.
They have two wins. I know they're both midweek, but they have two wins against Florida. What more do you want from them? They blew two games against Clemson. Like, so be it. But now they have Boston College, Miami coming up. Like, they should win five games there.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree.
Let me go back to my notes here. Quadrant one wins. How cool is this? So I like looking at quadrant one wins throughout the year, and it's fluid because 1 week a team might be a quadrant one win and then they drop to like 51st in the RPI and they're no longer a quadrant one win. But as of right now, like last week, Clemson had 15 quadrant one wins. Now they have 9. But you look at the top 10, or I guess it's the top 13 because there's a bunch tied for 9th. But I like looking at them because I think these are all super regional teams. Clemson has 9, Oklahoma has 8, Duke 7, Miami 7, Florida 6, Kentucky 6, North Carolina 6, UCF 6, and then Georgia, Maryland, Oklahoma State, South Carolina, and Tennessee have 5. So I forgot my point I was going to make. Other than like a couple of these teams, like Oklahoma State, for example, or I don't know. Anyways, what I'm saying is I forgot what I was going to say.
I'm confused to what you're going to say.
I should have wrote it down. I had a formula that I was going to say, and I completely just blanked on it. It had to do with last year's quadrant one wins at this time. I'm pretty sure. It'll come back to me. Sorry to the listeners out there. It's late. It's past midnight. It had to do with like non-conference. I think it had to do with non-conference.
Let's circle back on this.
We'll circle back on it. I have two like kind of mid-major points to make.
Talk about it.
Lamar Cardinals, 22-5, sweep Oklahoma. That was a huge sweep.
Massive sweep.
Yeah, at Oklahoma, who's in first place in the Big 12. I don't know if Oklahoma is ready to play. Like, I get it. It's the middle of conference play, and you have a non-conference team coming in. But I think it showed me a lot about Lamar. Like, right now, Lamar's like on pace to be like a 2 or a 3 seed in the regionals.
I mean, Lamar, 54 in RPI, 3-2 against quad one team. They have work to do. They have a lot of work to do. But win the Southland Conference regular season title, don't lose any horrible series, and they'll be an at-large team.
Yeah, 100%.
But the RPI, I mean, they need Oklahoma to stay high. They need Sam Houston's RPI to stay in that, move up a little bit, and then have nobody super terrible in the Southland. And I think they'll get in. I think they could be an at-large team. That's a massive road series win, especially if Oklahoma wins the Big 12.
Yes. If Oklahoma wins the Big 12, like it's going to be huge. I halfway remember what my quadrant one win thing was going to be. I know what it was. The committee this year has been told the quadrant one wins is different, right? This year versus the last 10 years. And there's a new formula, right? You have a blank stare on your face.
I'm listening to you. Sure.
No, I was mostly asking, like, what is this new formula? And like, how much should we be weighting quadrant one wins?
I mean, a quad one win is a quad one win.
Okay. So I don't think you know about it. There
I mean, I know what it is. I know that they changed the formula to
what is
40 neutral, 1 through 40. Okay, 1 through 25 at home, 1 through 40 neutral, and 1 through 60 away. So if you beat a team that is 55 in the RPI on the road, that counts as a quad one win.
Okay, that was my question. Is so we should not be weighting quadrant one wins anymore.
Yes, right? we should.
But not like the original.
Yeah, because it's the same for everybody. If that makes sense.
Okay. Oh, that's what it is. Okay. Sorry for my brain fart. I see what you're saying. 1 through 25 at home is a quadrant one win. 1 through 40, a neutral site, is a quadrant one win. 1 through 60 on the road is a quadrant one win.
Correct.
Wow, that's cool. And then quadrant two, 26 through 50 at home, 41 through 80 neutral, 61 through 120 away is a quadrant two win.
Yes. So that's so basically what that does is helps a team that played on the road early a lot against some good team. That helps. It doesn't punish a team that loses a series at home to a top 25 RPI team. And it helps, you're on the road against a team that's, you know, 55 or whatever. It counts a quad one win because you went on the road and beat a 55 RPI, 59 RPI team, which you could argue, oh, but they're 59 quad two. No, but we beat them on the road. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's the whole point of it. It just kind of tried to help the northern schools that are on the road a lot, give them a little boost. And it also helped teams that, you know, like Irvine last year missed the postseason because of quad one win when they had like six wins left off the table on teams that were 51 through 59. 51 through 60 RPI, for example. They had like six wins off the table right there. So, yeah.
Yeah, like I'm looking at Nebraska right now, who's 20-5 this year. They're 10-3 quadrant two, but 0-1 quadrant one. So there's a good chance that some of those 10 wins are going to squeak over to the quadrant one
maybe
by the end of the year.
I'll tell you right now. I mean, we don't have to tell you. We're kind of all over the map right now. But, yeah, so you brought up that point. What about you want to go back into a little conference talk on some of the other conferences?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, like the Big 12 is crazy right now. It's kind of it's weird. Like UCF is sixth in the RPM, which is really cool. I don't understand why though. They say they have the number two non-conference RPI in the nation. They've played three against Bryant, midweek Miami, three against Samford, Samford, not Stanford, Samford, FAU midweek, USF for three, Florida midweek, Stetson midweek. Like those are their non-conference games. I don't get why that's the number two non-conference strength of schedule.
Because their worst RPI team on the schedule is Bryant at 179. That's a lot though.
You're telling me that there wasn't teams playing better non-conference schedules?
Yeah, I mean 179 is not horrible for your worst non-conference series. I mean Clemson, I mean there's plenty. I mean, I'll tell you right now, let me look at, for example, Clemson, number one in the RPI. Their worst team that they played is 212 Presbyterian, 253 Manhattan for two, Presbyterian again, Winthrop 173, 212. So it's like they just have some of those that are a little up there, and they're still number one. And so that's why UCF is pretty high.
But I think a team like Southern Miss played a better non-conference schedule.
Maybe. I'm not saying they're the best one. I'm just saying – that
the math just ain't mathing to me right now. I don't get it.
I mean, their non-conference strength of schedule is four. Their overall strength of schedule is four. It's because they have no horrible RPI weighing it down that much. So anyway,
makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. So I mean, UCF, I mean, Oklahoma and Kansas State. I mean, I think Texas can still win the Big 12. I've said it a couple weeks ago. I still think they can do it.
Right, dude, right now anybody can win the Big 12. The team in first place is Oklahoma, 7-2. They just got swept by Lamar. There's a few teams that I'm excited about, like Texas. You're right. Like they did have a big series win at Kansas State, and they won one of the games, like 20-10 or something like that.
They took the series.
Yeah, took the series at Kansas State, which is huge. So that puts both Kansas State and Texas at 6-3, a game back from Oklahoma. Texas has the tiebreaker there. But then, like, Kansas, Oklahoma State, West Virginia, like they're all good teams, but like I don't see them as a threat to win the Big 12. Even maybe though JJ Weatherholt just came back for West Virginia.
I think West Virginia will be in that top three, top four by the end of the year.
Yeah. UCF, after getting swept by Oklahoma to open Big 12 play, they're 6-6, so they're 6-3 the last
two out of three games. Every weekend.
Yeah, a big 2 out of 3 against Texas Tech at home. That was big time.
I mean, TCU with the sweep, they're right there. TCU is only 3.5 games out. They're going to be in the top by the end of the year if they kind of slowly heat up again.
Yeah, so, it's crazy to me that Baylor is 5-7. I still can't get over Baylor being 5-7 in Big 12 play.
I mean, who do they play? They played Houston, Texas Tech, Texas, and Cincinnati. I mean,
yeah, they have BYU and Kansas coming up.
Yep.
West Virginia. Like, shout out to Baylor. They're hanging around, getting better every year.
Anyway, yeah, I mean, I think the Big 12 is too big of a mess right now to kind of, but that's just the general picture. Oklahoma, Kansas,
the Big 12 does not have, like, currently the Big 12 has nobody ranked in the top 25. Oh, I think UCF cracked the rankings at like 25 for D1. But yeah, it's just weird to see. Like, is somebody going to host a regional out of the Big 12?
Oklahoma, Oklahoma could, UCF could, Oklahoma State still could. Texas still can. Kansas, I mean, all these teams still can. TCU still can. It's too early.
So early.
Anyway.
Here's a team that I hope hosts a
UCF
regional.
UCF did. Wow. I did not even see D1 top 25 yesterday. UCF did get in. Kansas State and Oklahoma dropped out. UCF gets in. That's funny.
Yeah. I'm gonna rattle off some teams because I'm sure we're boring the listeners. I'm sorry. Whatever. We'll be better next episode here in a few days. But here's a few teams I'm rooting on to host a regional right now. Number one that I hope hosts a regional is Nebraska, because Haymarket Field or Park or whatever they call it is elite.
Haymarket.
Like, Haymarket. Yep. And the fan base is strong. Like, they're not a Big Ten baseball team. Like, they are a more of a Big 12 or Pac-12 baseball fan base. Strong. Dallas Baptist is another one. I want to see DBU host another regional. That's just exciting to me. There's two more teams that are at the bottom. I hope the Louisiana Raging Cajuns host a regional. They've won 11 straight. First place in the Big South, or not the Big South, sorry, the Sun Belt. And the Teague during playoff time is awesome. Like, I just remember those like 2012, 13, 14 teams that hosted regionals or whatever years they were.
I think that's 2013, maybe 14.
I think 13 and 14. But
well, they were the number one overall national seed.
Yeah, it's crazy. But man, I would do anything for a Lafayette regional. Like, that's what I want. And then the last team, probably on the far outside, don't even know if it's possible, but I did tweet about it, the Lamar Cardinals. And I don't think their strength of schedule and quadrant one wins or anything they would pretty much have to win the rest of the games this season, but they have a sick field that nobody knows about. It's in Beaumont, Texas, which is like far east part of Texas, almost to Louisiana. And if they got a couple Louisiana teams in that regional, it would be sold out. It's just awesome. Very visually appeasing. So they're 22 wow. and 5 right now. They have a sweep over Oklahoma. It's probably impossible.
For anybody on YouTube that's curious what he's talking about.
Look at that. I think it used to be an old minor league stadium back in like the early 2000s. I had a high school coach that told me that he used to go to like dollar beer nights every Thursday there.
I mean, basically just a bunch of bleacher seats just wrapped all the way around. I think you can get a good crowd there. I mean, look, there's a power plant in right, softball field in center. There ain't shit else around except for a highway.
They could put in some temporary bleachers out there, like in the
left. I don't know. I mean, maybe here. I mean, you can extend this a little bit over here. Add some more over here. Add some right here. I mean, you could probably get foul pole to foul pole.
I don't know. It's a dream, but I don't think it's possible. Like, no. Even if they go 45-5, I don't think it's possible. But it would be sick.
Super fun.
But I am rooting for Nebraska, a Louisiana, and a who's the third team I said? DBU. Like, those are fun fan bases, nice stadiums, and regional atmosphere is awesome. Hey, so, anyways,
I mean, the Pac-12. I mean, I can't believe Cal is ninth in the Pac-12, 2 games under .500, 5-7. I can't believe UCLA is down there, but
nobody wants to win the Pac-12, dude.
I mean, Oregon, I think, is the best team by far to win the Pac-12. I mean, sorry, Oregon State.
Yeah, Oregon State, but they did just lose 2 out of 3 to USC. USC is playing better baseball now, dude.
I know. We shit-talked USC into oblivion.
Yeah, but they're 6-5 in Pac-12 play. Like, big series win against Oregon State. I just think Oregon State's going to run away with it. But, yeah, Utah's a surprise team this year. It feels like every week it's flip-flop. Like, somebody will win 2 out of 3 and then lose 2 out of 3 to a bad team.
Or get swept and then go sweep.
Yeah. I haven't had a good feel on the Pac-12 this year. Yeah. It usually is so consistent with, like, Stanford, Oregon State, Oregon. And this year it's not. So last year of the conference before it disbands or whatever.
I was thinking about it. Since we're about to record another episode in 2 days from now, previewing the weekend and the midweek and kind of catching up on more team, do you want to just kind of preview the midweek and then talk more on Wednesday?
Yeah, like, I know there's a bunch of Tuesday games that are fun.
Because the reason why is because we're at an hour already, and it's just like how much more they're covered right now. I mean, we could talk on and on. I think our listeners know we could stay here for 5 hours and talk.
I want to do a field of 64 projection before the weekend.
Since we're at the halfway point?
Yeah. And so you and I can work on it tomorrow or whenever, but yep. That's something that I want to happen. I want to have happen. Like,
let's do
maybe,
that.
Maybe that's what we'll do. We'll preview the weekend, obviously, next episode, but we'll go through a field of 64 projection and just lay out where teams are at right now and like what they need to do to get in that field of 64.
Oh, hey, one more thing before we get into the midweek. Shout out to the Georgia State Panthers. They absolutely cooked us on Twitter, or X, sorry. By the way, who was the one that said that? Was it you or me?
We both said it.
Is that what it, I couldn't remember. I was listening to the audio and I was like, I don't remember the full conversation.
Yeah, I said, I think this James Madison team is way better than Georgia State.
And then I said, I agree.
You're like, yeah, I agree. I think they're way better. And Georgia State went out and just whooped James Madison. So you guys can check our Twitter. We retweeted it. It was pretty funny. A little hype video.
Yeah, I got a shirt that's going to come out for them. They're super pumped about that. I think they deserve it. They basically just called us out and, you know, took care of business. What the hell do we know?
They have a huge midweek game against Georgia tomorrow.
What else do we got on the slate tomorrow?
Well, the biggest midweek game tomorrow, and people might argue, but I don't care, but it's at Charles Schwab Field, Nebraska at Creighton. Nebraska is 20-5. Creighton is 20-4, and it's in Omaha, like at the College World Series field. And so I broadcasted the Creighton game at Charleston Southern on Friday and was talking to Coach Service at Creighton. He's like, yeah, we might see upwards of like 10, 11, 12,000 people there. So that's going to be an awesome atmosphere. I'm excited about that game.
That's going to be watching a good one.
I will probably be betting on it, but yeah, it's a that's probably my favorite midweek of tomorrow. There's low key other, like, good, really good low ones. Low key
a good one. Liberty coming off a sweep at a good Sam Houston State. They host Duke tomorrow night. I think that could be a good one.
Oh yeah, Liberty. Like, the last 2 or 3 years, Liberty whoops up on these ACC teams in the midweek.
Yeah, they did. I mean, they lost. They lost a lot of bad baseball games. I mean, they lost 7 straight to Coastal Charleston in East Carolina. They got swept twice, lost Charleston, sandwiched in the middle there. That's 7 straight. I mean, and then they reeled off series win, and then swept Sam. Oh, sorry, I said that Sam that home, but a good Sam Houston State team. So maybe Liberty figured it out, and they get scorching hot the rest of the year. That could be a team to watch out for.
Yeah, 100%. They're always dangerous. Jacksonville at Florida State, that's a big one. Jacksonville always just feels like they always beat Florida and Florida State in the midweeks.
Yeah, Georgia Southern Indiana at Charleston. State.
Wait, what'd you say?
Georgia Southern at Charleston.
Yeah, that's a good one. Indiana State at Indiana is always a big rivalry game.
I mean, Indiana State took the first one already.
Yeah. East Carolina at NC State. NC State's been hot recently. They was it last week they beat Coastal in a midweek or 2 weeks ago?
2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Coastal at UNCW, that's a big rivalry. Those two teams don't like each other very much. Charlotte Campbell's going to be a high-scoring game. The Miami FAU, it just feels like this is the time of year we see some really good midweek games. Sam Houston at Lamar.
Louisville at Kentucky, yep.
Yeah.
Southern Miss at Southeastern and Hammond America.
Yeah. Samford is hosting Alabama, and I'm pretty sure Samford, that's back-to-back SEC midweeks that they're hosting.
Yeah.
At their field. That's cool. Samford Texas A&M at Texas State. Ooh, that's my upset pick. Texas State's been playing bad baseball, but this is going to get them back on track. Texas State needs Texas A&M.
That could be a good turnaround game. Get that win and then turn your season around and get going again.
100%. I always love, and I'm impartial to the Rice-Houston matchup. I know they're not as good as they used to be, but that game used to mean a lot back in the day.
Yeah.
One of the newest members of the mid-major top 25, the Portland Pilots, is hosting Oregon. That's a nice West Coast game.
Yeah, man.
Grand Canyon, Arizona State. Those two teams don't like each other. Remember last year there was some pregame post-game interview stuff.
They said somebody from Arizona State basically said that, hey, they don't belong in the same fields as us, and then proceeded to get smacked. So, yeah, give me a good weekend. We'll get you guys more content, more stuff. We'll dive into more stuff as we get through this week.
Yeah, this week's pretty much loaded up. I'm excited for it. But we'll get a Field 64 projection out there. We'll do some other things. We're trying to get more creative. So, anyways, it's late. We got to hang up here. We'll be back, I guess, in like a day or two, technically.
Yeah, 48 hours.
Yep. All right. Anyways, y'all have fun and appreciate everybody for listening.